Blog Talk Radio.
Jordan Pauline and a beautiful, adorable little songstress out of LA. That's one of her latest singles, What? I had the opportunity for her to grace me with her presence a few months ago, and really go getter and just a beautiful artist. You can follow her on Instagram. It's Jordan Pauline. So let's get into, without further ado, tonight or today's featured guest, or whatever part of the world you're in. He goes by Arson. He's a recording artist out of West Philly, who is known for having a soulful, edgy, retroactive style of hip-hop music. He describes his lyrical styles as a rapid-fire flow with a contemporary and entertaining conscious direction. He advocates positive change for individuals and urban communities and has a worldwide following known as the Fire Family. Arson's latest album, Want, is currently rated 5 stars on Google Play and iTunes. Music videos from album have been featured on BT, MTV, and singles, and the album has been in rotation on the national mainstream radio. He got the idea for his stage name during a cipher when the crowd began to scream fire, and every time he performed. So one day he looked up different synonyms for fire and found words that reflected his lyrics like passion and intensity. He came up with the name Arson, which was later changed to Arsin, which is A-R-S-I-N, our sin. His philosophy was that Arson, the idea of right and wrong, affects our values in society in terms of classism, racism, political, religious ideologies, and he uses his music to reflect his experience with those issues. So without further ado, I would love to introduce my featured guest for today. Gracing my presence is Arson out of West Philly. How are you?
Yeah. How you doing today? I'm great. I'm feeling good.
That's what's up. Thank you for being on the show. And Arson, so since we're getting into out of West Philly, and how long did it take you or for you to get to the status you are now, being a native of West Philly? Because it can be rough out there, but Philly has put several artists on the map that are from Philly that have definitely, put Philly on the map. And, of course, we all know Will Smith and Freeway, We got Vero the Virus. We've got a few others, to say the least, like, you know, Reef, The Lost Cause, Out of Space, to name a few. And so now you are, of course, Schooly D. Everybody knows who Schooly D is, old school. So now we have Arson to add to that list. And how did that come about, Arson?
Well, I mean, I started in middle school. You know, I just started rapping because I found some tapes on the ground. It was actually Brand Nubians at the time. And I actually started listening to them. And then later on, I got into listening to Bone Thugs and Harmony. I got into listening to Tupac, Nas, Eminem. And for me, I just wanted to express myself. I mean, it was crazy. Crazy things going on. You know, as a 10, 11-year-old from West Philadelphia, you're seeing people get killed. A lot of drugs, a lot of people on drugs, a lot of people selling drugs. And the only way out was my mind. You know, physically, I couldn't go nowhere at the time because that was just a situation that me and my family was in. But mentally, you know, seeing hip-hop and seeing other artists, you know, and at that time, there was no social media. So all you really could do was pop in a CD or a tape and just hear somebody else's story. So I wanted to do that, you know. And it started when I did a talent show in middle school and I performed a song and, you know, the news station was there. The crowd went crazy, and from that point on, I was like, dang, I can really express myself, but I also can, like, entertain people and make people take a minute to step out of what they're going through. So it started there. I started doing talent shows. I was in a couple rap groups at the time. Broke up, got into another rap group. We won a lot of talent shows, and then later on, I went solo, kept doing the talent shows and the showcases and hitting the streets. And like I said, this was before internet, so we was out there in the cold,
so
in the heat.
If you could tell
posters,
me,
you know what I mean?
Let me say this. What year was this? What, because for myself, you know, I'm from the Bronx. I'm from New York. I can relate to, you know, a lot of things you're talking about because New York is the birthplace of hip-hop. So when I was a young girl born in 73, not to say my age, but you get to see a lot growing up. You know, my father is a 5%er. He's very proactive and very revolutionary, as you could say. And growing up in New York City, I was blessed to leave at 8 years old. My mother married a Marine, and we were gone. But as I got older, you know, maybe like 13, 14, 15, coming back to New York around then, that had to have been in the 80s, you know, in your 80s or something, and crack cocaine down the road became a big epidemic. Before that, it was heroin, which went rampant in the streets of Harlem. Case in point, while we have stories like Bumpy Johnson, and they were heroes and villains at the same time, and the heroin epidemic took us by storm, killed a lot of our people, crack epidemic. Brothers and sisters, some of them die into it, some making money off of it, some rapping about it. So I relate to you, but what year or what was the time frame in the year that you stepped into that arena of hip-hop? What year was that?
I would say it was like 2000, 2001. I was in like eighth grade. That's when I really started performing and started, like, you know, my first time going to the studio. I was 12, so that was the beginning stages at that time. I mean, back before FedEx, it was Kinko's. So I would go to Kinko's and make my CDs, my covers, and I would go to school, and I would just give them out in school, you know. And a lot of people, when you first start, they don't really, you know, my peers weren't about, like, Pokemon cards and stuff. They wasn't really into what I was into, but that's when it started. I mean, the grind got more serious in like 2004, 2005, 2006 when I really start. You know, that was my first time being on radio, doing a radio interview with Patty Jackson, the legendary Patty Jackson. She was the first person to ever do an interview with me. You know, I would bug her to death every day, email her, yo, I'm trying to get on the radio, I'm trying to get on the radio. And
I wish
even
I
would have
known
station.
You back then, because honestly, I was doing radio at the age of 20, 4, I entered into radio at Foxy 107-104, which is in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's owned by Radio 1. And I'm still friends with all of my colleagues that work at that radio station. Had we known each other back then, we would definitely put you on the, you know, mixtape special with Brothers and Sisters Go. So that's crazy how...
Yeah, everything comes around. It was actually Radio 1. Yeah. It was Radio 1. It was DJ Touchtone, Colby Cole.
Oh, no.
You know, they were the first ones to put me on air. So, no, I appreciate that. And they gave me a nice interview, like a nice one, like live on air, like 20, 30 minutes. I was, like, really appreciative of that. So that was, like, the time frame when I got started.
Now, how old were you? You don't mind me asking.
Well, I got now or then?
Then.
Oh, at the time when I first started recording, I was 12. But when I started taking
serious. Like when you did the interview with Radio 1.
Oh yeah, I was when I did the interview with Radio 1, I was 18.
Okay,
yeah,
so 18. You were still a young man pursuing your dream. And did you back then, did you have support from like your fire family back then, or what?
Well,
was
at the
it
time,
like?
It wasn't no fire. It was just kind of a movement. I mean, I was grinding so hard, man. Like if y'all go look at the interview with me and DJ Touchstone, you'll hear him say I'm the hardest working artist in Philadelphia. You know, a lot of other artists at the time, they had like backings, like they had Charlie Max, they had Cosmic Kev behind them, a lot of the gatekeepers in the city. But with me, I just had me, you know, and I had to build my following. I had to, you know, recruit people. So, yeah, I had the support, you know, but it came from a lot of grinding and from muscle. It wasn't really nobody co-signing me, you know, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of other artists were getting co-signs from people, like I said, those gatekeepers. And they always had, like, you know, people, you know, co-signing them and all of that. I had to earn it, so definitely had the support, but it was from the muscle.
Yeah, because for me, I have to admit, in the 90s, this was in the 90s when I was living in New York City, I had left Virginia State University to pursue my dream. So I moved back home to New York, and I was working in two recording studios at the time, like Platinum Island Recording Studio and Green Street.
Yeah.
I was doing my thing, promoting parties and nightclubs like Tunnel, Nels. All these other hot spots in New York in my early 20s. So I remember through some friends of mine listening to the Roots Crew when they came out with that song, The Silent Treatment. You know what I mean? And that, you know, and that other I Shall Proceed to Continue to Rock the Mic, that's when I got turned on. Even though Will Smith and all them, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince was definitely an impact, but something about the Roots Crew really drew me. And then Freeway as well. Like when Freeway came out, that's what
really,
in my mind, the Roots, you know, the Roots Crew and Freeway, because Freeway, I believe, is down like with Jay. And it was just something about the way, you know, the style, the way they, their flow, that's what really made me start paying attention to Philly artists. And then you have a songbird like Jill Scott, who is just an amazing poet, lyricist, artist, and she comes from Philly. So for you to come from such a powerful powerhouse place.
Yeah. You got Gambling House, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gambling House.
So,
Frankie Beverly and Maze. It's just a musical, artistic city.
Just like, yeah, and I love that. So when did you start finding yourself getting into live performances, having a camp around you? How did that begin for you after having the radio interview? Was there a buzz, or did you have a break where it was just like nobody put me on, frustration? Tell me a little bit about that.
I mean, the thing about it is, yeah, with so many changes, we was going from a time of CDs into – you know, online and MP3s and streaming. So the whole industry was just changing, and it was changing. I didn't see it at the time, but it was changing for the better for independent artists. But, yes, it was a lot of frustration because I got 50 people calling the radio station Like, they tell them to call, and they call, and they don't play the song. You know, I had to learn a lot as an artist. I had to learn a lot about this game, that this stuff ain't really what it seems like. You know, you thought that you called and asked for the song, and they would play it. But in reality, they got to play what they told to play by the program director, because the program director has a relationship with the labels, and they sticking to that schedule. And then I had to learn that, okay, you can get to the mix shows, because that's outside of the programming. But then the DJs want all this money. The DJs like, pay me this, pay me that. And I wasn't with it at the time. I mean, I still had the philosophy of what I'm paying you to play my record for. It is hot. You a DJ. We supposed to be cousins in hip hop. MC and DJ, like,
and
supposed to play.
The only way around that, the only way around that is if you let college stations show you love. You know what I mean?
And that's exactly
what I did.
I did that, yep. I went straight to Cheney University. That's where I was going at the time.
So,
and I went to Lincoln University.
What colleges did you pinpoint? Just Philly, or did you go all over?
I was all, like, East Coast. Like, so, Pennsylvania, period. Like, up to Pittsburgh, New York, D.C., Baltimore. But by that time, like, you know, I was just going so hard that I started to get more radio interviews. I started, you know, to do more on the mainstream radio here, because, like I said, it wasn't that they were really, like, I did a lot of, like, I did Temple, Drexel University, but it wasn't that they were, like, playing the song as much as they were doing interviews and slotting me in the mix shows. But at the time, that's when the internet started getting bigger and bigger, and people, the consumers, just wasn't even really listening to the radio as much, so it kind of shifted over to online. And then my online following got so big. And then, you know, fast forward years later, them same stations that me and my friends were standing outside with CDs trying to ask, hey, do you work here? Can we give you the CD to play it? Those same stations was calling us to have us perform at their annual events, you know. So I went from standing outside the station to them paying me to perform at their events. And then Cosmic Kev is, you know, they call him the number one DJ here. I never met him. I never spoke to him to this day. And, you know, a lot of independent artists had bad things to say about him because he's such a hard guy to get to, and there's rumors that he take money and all of this. But I ain't never paid him a dime. But I know one thing, the dude played my music, you know, and I never paid him. I never spoke to him. You know, we never had no contact. But sometimes when you just resist, when you're resilient and you're consistent and you got good material, it's only but so long they're going to, like, try to act like they don't see it. And I just went the long route with it. I went hard, and then, you know, at this point, everybody know what it is. And Philly is one of the hardest cities to come up in as an artist. Very, very hard. Very hard. They not going to support
you. Oh, no, I agree with you, because this is the thing. And when you tell me this stuff, me being on the other end and working in radio, you're absolutely right when it comes to they check Billboard charts on a daily basis. The Billboard charts determine that the rotation the song is going to go in. Is it heavy, medium, or small, or light rotation? The music director is told by the program director. He does the programming. The music director does the loading of all the music for every hour, and based on if it's heavy rotation, medium, or light, that's how songs are repetitive. You feel me? So payola, does it exist? I mean, come on. I never saw no money change hands, but when you rub elbows with the right person, it helps. And people don't realize, but radio is essential to getting an artist on there, out there. Now, with online access, when did you see yourself, what year was it that you stepped in to the online world? Was it SoundCloud? Was it YouTube? And what year did you do all of that and start getting that
following? In 2012, I stepped in that. I mean, 2006, I was already, you know, on MySpace doing that thing. But 2012 is when I started to see, like, okay, damn, I'm getting more people that know me from across the world. From, you know, I dropped a video called Reflection in 2012, and it was about a friend of mine who got killed. And once I did that video, it's like it got 40,000 views within like a month. So once I seen that, I was like, okay. And then, you know, once, you know, it became available for artists to get paid through those streaming services, I put myself right in the position to get paid. So, you know, things took off then. And then once that took off, you know, the other stuff, the social media took off, SoundCloud took off, Spotify, Tidal, Apple Music, you know. So at this point, it's like, you know, the way the game is now, you don't necessarily have to be on radio to have, you know, exposure.
A following, yeah.
Exactly.
Now,
so,
tell me about, I posted you and I bragged about you by posting the pictures with you in common, and he autographed his book. When did that all occur, and how did that impact your life, and are you cool with him like that? When did that occur?
Well, back in 2006, I opened up for him in Philly. And he knows a lot of people in Philly. He knows Joe Scott, you know, DJ Active. And he's all, you know, when it comes to Philly, I know everybody. So DJ Active is like a DJ that I work with. He also is a DJ for Janet Jackson, and we come from West Philly. So, you know, just knowing the same people over the years, you know, I see him, and I grew up listening to Common, so it was on a different level. So, you know, when I met up with him recently, he was familiar with me. Like, yeah, you the guy that I did a couple of shows and you was going crazy. And I was like, yeah. So, you know, we talked and, you know, they did a show here. He did the Roots Picnic. And then he was like, yo, I'm going to be at the bookstore. You know, you should come through or whatever. I definitely want to hear your music more because I've been seeing you do your thing. And I told him, I'm like, yeah, man, I mean, I grew up listening to you. I respect what you do. So I'm going to support you, you know what I mean? And when we got together, you know, he gave me a copy of the book. I gave him a copy of my album. He signed the book for me. I signed the album for him, you know. And, you know, since then, he just been supporting, you know, when he come through the city or he around. Oh, you know, we ain't best of friends. Like, we ain't homies. Like, probably.
No. But he definitely
cool.
Shows you love, though. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. And for me, I'm going to tell you this right now. Like, Kwame, Naughty by Nature, Big Daddy Kane, Rakim, Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Wait a minute, did you just say Kwame? Like Kwame
yes.
With the high top and
yes.
The polka dots? Like,
Dana
now you're
Dane,
talking about my time. Yeah. Like,
Dana Dane,
I love
Slick Rick.
Yeah.
Every Chop Rock, everybody I just named, you can go look online. They all gave me respect. And I know for a lot of people that's in the hip hop now that probably don't know who that is or probably don't care.
I know who that is.
Yeah, of course you
that's
do.
A big
I'm
deal.
Just saying for me.
For me, it's the biggest deal
because these are the foundations of this. So yeah, people see me with Khalid or people see me with people that's relevant now and they'd be like, oh, that's what's up. But for me, the people I named that I actually had a chance to work with or got video with, and actually came out, Big Daddy Kane came out of his mouth and said, "You hot." And, you know, that's like Grammy level for me on my bucket list because, like I said, these are the people who created. That's Jay-Z over here. That's Jay-Z who Jay-Z came
now,
up under.
Kane is a legend in the field. Back when he was Mr. C was his DJ, Scoop and Scrap Lover was his dancers. He was sporting the high top fade. He had this incredible double-edged sword tongue. And now Kane lives in North Carolina. And he's a producer, and he does all this amazing thing. I've been blessed to meet Kane several times doing radio in North Carolina, just like now, Terminator X. He is someone I was blessed to hang out with and listen to him DJ parties because my homeboy that works for K97.5 is his DJ. So now he's married, he's settled down in North Carolina, and he's doing this thing with DJing and still does this thing with Public Enemy, but more so the love of music and DJing and doing all that, he blesses people out there. So I definitely relate to where you're coming from, and it's got to be amazing for you. So let's touch on this real quick before we go, because I have questions about, like, your camp now and Fire Family. But I'm going to ask you this question because I read an article about you being a Philly rapper who lost 45 friends to gun violence. Would you like to expound on that, please?
Yeah, let me say this. Like, you know, I do a lot in the community, and I've been working in the community since I was 15 with Children's Hospital, the City of Philadelphia, giving back to the youth. For me, I lost a lot of are friends, you know, like, you know, it wasn't like all friends. They were like associates, classmates, people I rant with, just people, you know, I knew and I cared about. And the number one cause of death statistically in Philadelphia for young black men is gun violence. So, at, you know, that article was a couple of years ago, and I just recently lost 5 this year. You know, this year, you know, one of my neighbors, you know, it's just crazy, you know. So, and I've been shot myself. My best friend is paralyzed from the neck down. He's been like that since he was 16. So, yes, it's crazy, you know, like it's very, very traumatic. You know, there's a lot of post-traumatic stress going on in this, in these communities. So, you know, I definitely try to make sure that through my music and through just everything I'm doing, even outside of music, that I'm trying to make some change, and I'm trying to let, you know, the community know that there's other ways to handle stuff and express yourself, you know, when you're going through something. So, yeah, that definitely happened. I mean, it was people, it was just different, you know, street situations. Like, a lot of people were just at the wrong place at the wrong time. A lot of people were just doing stuff that, you know, that was the life they was living, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just, it, you know, it's nothing new, but I look at it like every person is special. So, you know, it ain't just a number of people. It, you know, these are real people. These people had family. These people had goals. These people were alive. You know, these people I would see in the studio or at a show one day, and I'm calling their phone or asking them how it was, and they're not answering it because they're not here no more. So, you know, when I do this, it's deeper than a lot of, I can't speak for all the artists, but for me, it's deeper than just, you know, the surface level stuff. You know, a lot of these people believed in me. A lot of these people believed in change. And, you know, when I go in, I think about, they're like a lot of the motivation behind the stuff I do, including my sister too. You know, I did a little video about her on my page, on my Instagram. You know, I really was kind of like on the fence about putting that out, but I had to be vulnerable, because one of the best things you can do as an artist is be vulnerable, because that's what makes you brave as an artist. Because a lot of people like to hide up their scars. They like to, you know, put on facades. But as an artist, I don't give a shit. Like, I tell you what it is, because that's the people I listen to. That's the people I looked up to as artists and revolutionaries were, and they made some good changes.
Of course. And so during the interview, hip hop pioneer Kwame, as you said, stated, "I do all right, but often tears the stage down when he performs." And then quote goes on to say, "My goal is to push the limits of contemporary music and contribute a unique sound to the culture of hip hop." So proceeding forward with the culture of hip hop, how did you and the Fire family come about? And how long have you guys been, a family? And part two, are you being represented by management? And how is that going for you?
Well, throughout the years, I learned a lot. Back then, so many people was trying to charge for everything. So you start to learn how to do things on your own. And through the years, you know, I already had other talents. Like, I dance, I act. I learned how to do video production, music production. So a lot of the music you hear is produced. A lot of the videos are produced and edited. But I also start branching out. I start making a network of people who do things like graphic art. A lot of the DJs who are upcoming, you know, I understood what it was like and the importance of relationships. So I start building a network of people so we can do a bargaining system, or we can do, you know, I can get you that for this, and start building my own networking team. And outside, that was the professional side. And then on the movement side, you know, people just felt like they wanted the support. So I just realized that a lot of the people who were connecting with my music all had some type of passion or some fire, or just was looking for some type of guidance or entertainment or just an escape. So I created the Fire family based on the movement. And it was just a concept. It was just something tangible for people worldwide, you know, people in Africa, Australia, you know, all over, that I never meet, or, you know, they've always been following me for years, that no matter where you are in the world, you can be a part of this team. And this team is about being a part of a mission of having a burning desire for something, whatever your thing is, whether you do hair, whether you do construction, whether it's artistic or not, but you're part of this Fire family. And what I do with the Fire family is, yeah, I promote the stuff that I'm doing, but a lot of the times you'll see me promote other artists or promote other businesses or other, you know, because like I said, it's about anything that has to do with something positive and people wanting to better themselves. So it makes people feel like you're investing in them and their vision, and they're definitely going to invest back because I'm like that. So if you support me, then I'm going to find a way to make a platform for everybody that support me to support each other, because relationships are the best thing in the world. So the Fire Family came about from the people who support, and then me and my brother started Extinguish Entertainment because of all of the connects that we ran across over the years through marketing, promotion, and stuff that we had to learn on our own because nobody taught us. And we learned this stuff instead of us just, you know, keeping it to ourselves and saying, oh, no, you can't get that. We found a way to monetize a lot of this stuff. We do consulting. We do marketing. We do video production. We do TV commercials. We just did one for a car dealership. We just did a video for artists. We do all the stuff that I was blessed to get throughout the years. We just turned around and created a company, and we do events. We're doing an event with Moneybagg Yo coming up with a new venue here in Philly in December. So all of that stuff just started to develop over the years. So Extinguish Entertainment is the company. It's me and my brother. We have a team of people that was around since day one. We do a lot of the promotion and stuff. And then we use the Fire Family. It's just like, you know, the movement worldwide to help push and keep things alive.
I like that. I mean, you definitely seem like a man that's driven, passionate about your purpose and life. I'm going to hit play on something and tell me if you hear it. You hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it.
That's your newest single, which is called On the Move. Give us a little bit of understanding. What's the motivation behind On the Move? That's your latest single, did you just say, right?
Yeah, it's not the latest, but it's one of the newest ones. And I always tell people, you know, make sure you go check it out yourself because, you know, over the phone it always sounds different, but it's definitely
of
one
course,
of the newest.
Of course,
Yeah, you know, because people don't know that, so they'll be like, what the hell
was
that? You know,
No. But the flow is, you know what your flow reminds me of, which is so fire? Your flow reminds me a little bit of Twister, a little bit when he did Celebrity Overnight, because you just have a way with the tongue that flows. So what was the motivation behind the song, and tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so I did the album once last year, and, you know, that came out. But I wanted to drop a couple singles, so I dropped What I Like first. That did very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came up with On the Move because I just was on the momentum of What I Like. So On the Move, this whole year, you know, I just, my whole 2019, my attitude was, listen, you know, we're going to do what we like. We're going to be positive, and we're going to be focused. So being on the move is just like about just going out there, getting what you want to get, you know, accomplishing your goals, and just being on that road to to success. So it's just like moving, like staying moving. Like I always tell people, slow motion is better than nothing. So just being on the move, like a lot of people, just staying busy, staying focused, being driven. So the song was like an upbeat song, and the attitude on it is like, I don't care. I don't give. I don't care. Like, you know what I mean?
You got
like,
that
I don't care
attitude
what
like Kanye, which is like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm doing it.
Exactly.
That's what I
bottom
hear
line. Like,
song,
bottom line, I'm on
know?
The move, on the move. I ain't come to lose.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Get
right. it to I got
right.
it. Spend it and deposit. So it's like, that's what I wanted people to sing, whether you're working out to it, whether you got to get up to it, go on your way to work.
I'm
going to
be working
you know,
out to that. I'm just going to
yeah,
tell
so,
you.
So,
because,
you see what I'm saying? Whether you dance, whatever
yeah.
the situation is, move, get it popping. Do not stay stagnant. You know, so that
so
was
let
that's
me play
what
this. We know it's not from, we know we're on a blog show, guys. We know he's calling in. Let me play the other song that Austin had sent to me because I like the flow of this one too, and this is what I like. That one because it feels like a woman's anthem somewhat, you know, like you're definitely
yeah,
rooting for us women, and it reminds me of that song that Usher did when he was bigging up the strippers, you know, like when he pretty much said, don't mind if you swing on a pole, that'll make you a hoe, like it's now coming to the surface that brothers are realizing that sisters are as equally grinding for success. Everyone cannot
yeah.
be a Cardi B because Cardi B is an exception to a
even,
stripper's
dream. Even more so, the song I got, She Got the Bag, make sure y'all check that out. That song specifically, and that video specifically talks about women being bosses and having their own.
Yeah.
It's actually just a narrative. The whole song is just a narrative about a boss woman. I mean, women are the backbone, you know, and that's my opinion. And we got to uplift
right.
them. So, ain't no reason why.
So, you know, some of these ladies that are listening and they're listening to the podcast, I've got people that listen from Nigeria, Philippines, Greece, other countries listening to my podcast. Ladies want to know, is Arson off the market? Or is he, are you taken? Are you dating? What's the deal?
I'm off the market. I'm definitely off the market right now, you know.
Okay.
I don't like to get into details
about it. Is that by choice?
It's by choice. Yeah. It's by choice. Like, I ain't got, like, it's just personal stuff, you know what I mean? It ain't nothing negative, but, you know, sometimes you just got to focus on being in a relationship with yourself to make sure you good. And, you know, you ain't really trying to be with, you know, just be out here doing your thing. So it's like, yeah, I'm definitely off the market. But, you know, that's you know, as much as I'm going to say about that because, you know what I mean? I don't really get into all that. Now, what I can say, though,
no.
is if you listen to the
what?
Music, you can hear more about it because I definitely talk about it in there all the time. I got a new song called Nobody But You. And it's a song about me and a girl. You know, it's a lot of truth to it. It's a new video. It's called Nobody But You. Very intimate video. you know, so it just talks about my feelings in general, you know, like some of it's real, some of it's, you know, just creativity. But yeah, I definitely open to stuff. But you know, like right now, it's just the way that the world is right now.
Are you just focusing on arson right now? You sound like you're just focused.
I mean, I'm just focusing on me as a man right now. Like, just not even as an artist, just as a man. Like, you know, that's what it's about right now. I mean,
I got a quick question. Arson, because I speak highly about, like, my movement. The basis for the podcast when I first created it back in 2015 was different, but now I made a comeback and I created the podcast because I'm a breast cancer survivor. So I do post and I do, you know, put out information about my journey and also mental health and how important it is for us in the Black community to really be proactive with our mental health. Tell me, due to the trauma you've been through, the struggles, how important is mental health for you?
Mental health is important. I mean, outside of music, I'm a psychologist. You know, I get my PhD in a couple of years. I got my master's in 2012. So I do a lot of work with at-risk youth that's in crisis, specifically. You know, minority youth, and I always teach, you know, coping skills and addressing mental health, you know, because if your mind ain't right, then everything else don't matter. Your world don't matter. Your body, everything falls apart. So, and I think in a lot of do with this violence, a lot of these
guys
don't
slow it down real quick. I'm going to slow it down. I am so happy that you just said what you said, and I know I'm not being funny, but please repeat that part. If your mind is not right, your body is what?
Everything falls apart. Your body is going to fall apart.
Exactly.
Your world is going to fall apart.
Because
what I mean by your world is your perception, your world. Because you can't work. You can't do nothing. You can't be in a healthy relationship. You can't eat properly.
Right.
You can't do nothing if you ain't right mentally.
And
then we
got to
think about what everything going on.
But
like
hold
that.
Down, slow down. Now, because I testified in my podcast on, I think it was Tuesday night, I had a brother, he goes by Rob Daddy, he's a DJ, he's a car aficionado, and he is a male breast cancer survivor. But he was on my show on Tuesday night. And he also indicated that, you know, that type of situation in his life, at one time he struggled with depression and anxiety due to being a male breast cancer survivor and what he endured. But I noticed now people are becoming more proactive. But what about, and I'm sure you have been affected, what about those that are maybe in your close circle that still have not faced music with that and how it affects those they love? Can you touch on that?
You said they're in a closed circle and they still, I'm sorry, repeat that.
They're in your close circle, people that you may know.
Oh, my close circle. Okay, yeah.
That you don't have to say no names or anything like that, just examples of when you know certain people personally and you see them struggling with this and they still are in denial, how has that affected their relationships with family or you personally? Has that affected you? Has that made you, you know, shy away? Or what do you, you know, how have you experienced that, if you don't mind me asking?
I mean, I definitely give them the resources professionally and, you know, as far as natural supports, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's nature, I give them resources. I be there for them as much as I can. But I always tell people, like, as a friend, it's unethical for me to really try to be there for you professionally. So I can be there for you emotionally. But I always tell people, I mean, if you want help, I always use the analogy of this. Like, if you're falling off the building and I go to grab you, you got to put some effort in to reach your hand back out. So You know, you got to make a decision to go to your own rescue at some point, because if you try to help people too much, you enable them, because you're always going to be there for them. So you can give them the help and resources you need, but you got to empower them to let them know they can pull themselves up. You know, because if I ain't really empowering you to let you know you can pull yourself up, I ain't helping you. I'm making you dependent,
right,
you know, on
right,
me or the next situation. And it ain't good for me either, because it's going to drain my energy. So, I mean, if a person is in denial for too long, then I leave them be, and I put it in God's hands. I'm a person myself. I can't help nobody if I drain all my energy. It's not that
right,
I don't care. It's not that I don't love the person. But you gotta know what your limits is, and you can't play Superman and God to everything. You know what I mean? So I do my best.
I like that answer. Thank you. Now let's let our listeners know what's happening with you currently, tour dates, appearances. I did notice you have some things coming up actually this month. Can you share with our listeners tonight? Before we depart, like what's happening with Austin, where you're going to be at, and also where they can follow you on your social media pages.
For sure. My next show is in New York City, is in Brooklyn at the Paper Box.
My hometown. Oh, my God.
Yep.
You're going to New York, and what day is that?
That's the 19th. That's a Tuesday. It's with Major Stage at the Paper Box, which is a nice venue. I'll be there. And then after that, I'll be in Philadelphia. Moneybagg Yo is also performing. It's an event going on with the radio station. It's at a new venue called The Ave on Delaware Avenue. So I'll be performing there. And then in January, I'll be coming to D.C. and then New Orleans. But those dates and details are to be announced. I try to, like, have people focus on the next 2 months because, you know, people forget stuff. But, yeah, they're my next two shows.
Right.
Yeah, so November 19th, New York, December 14th, Philadelphia. And you can reach me on social media. I'm at Arsin215, A-R-S-I-N-215. Everything's Arsin215, everything. So Facebook.
Arsin is 215. Is Arsin, is 215 like an area code? What is that?
It's Philadelphia area code, 215.
Now, I want you down the road, you're going to have to invite me to one of your shows. I've never been to Philly. Never, never, never. I plan to be in Virginia next month. And then I think I'm going to go to my college. They do day parties because CIAA, like basketball tournaments, they happen in February in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I'll be back on the East Coast. So I definitely want an invitation if you have anything happening in the Philly area. I would love to come visit for a purpose because I've never been to Philly. Never, never, never.
Yeah, you got to come through. You know what I mean? You definitely got to come through.
You
got
to invite me, though. Don't forget to invite me.
Of course I'm inviting you. I was just on the West Coast. I did a show in L.A. If I'd have known then, I would have been over there. But
you need to come and do a show over here in either Tacoma or Seattle, Washington, because I don't know about you, but you know, this is an amazing place for marijuana being legal. And I really wanted to try to do and be a forerunner for a Reach Fest, like a mini concert, see if I can get High Times Magazine to sponsor it. I have connections with, like, one of my homeboys who's a producer. He goes by Teddy Ted. He produces Nice and Smooth and, you know, some old school artists like Positive K and others like that. And, you know, he wrote with Kid Capri, and those are my old school people. But Teddy did a show with Nice and Smooth out here some years ago.
I opened up for them years ago.
That's my boy. I mean, he just texted me yesterday, as a matter of fact.
I didn't know it was them until I met him. You know, I didn't know they were performing.
He's awesome. Yeah, but they have done stuff out here, and I would love to put together a mini concert with a few brothers like yourself, and Teddy actually agreed to do it if I could get the venue, to do like a fest like that to promote the awareness of hip-hop culture and how marijuana definitely coincides with it. Now, I used to work for High Times Magazine when I was like 22 and I lived in New York, so I'm a major advocate for it. and it's for the
medicinal
purpose. And yeah, great.
Everybody should go watch the documentary "Greener on the Grass is Greener." It's a good documentary about marijuana.
I saw that.
How they tried to criminalize it.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you see in the beginning though how they were trying to say, "Oh,
yeah, that's exactly
white
what
women,
they did.
White women are losing their minds and going wild and going off with black men."
It's all propaganda. So make sure y'all check that out so you can like recondition your mind about marijuana. It's called "The Grass
Is Green."
So thank you, Netflix.
It is on Netflix. "Grass Is Green." And hey, they even stated that some of the greatest jazz musicians, from Monk to Coltrane to Duke Ellington and others, were singing about marijuana in their lyrics.
And it was frowned upon back then, but when Monty Cyrus do it now, it's cool. So make sure y'all watch that and see what's up. What's up with our culture. She was really up because, I do this hip-hop thing for real.
No, and you know what? Something you said, Arson, made me reflect on the Wu-Tang saga that was on Hulu just recently. And And I was actually blessed with interviewing Elijah Martinez, who plays Divine, RZA's brother. He portrayed Divine. He came on my podcast.
We always make jokes.
I love him. He's so fly. But he actually is such an amazing person and so humble. And he was real patient with me. I was having technical issues that day. So we wound up having to jump on Instagram Live, and he still did it with me. But Elijah shed some light so very you understand the background behind RZA and his brother Divine's relationship and how it correlated to the making of Wu-Tang and how important Divine was to RZA's life. Even the dissension that added towards the end of Wu-Tang when they were all departed came from issues that some of the artists didn't realize how strong of a standing RZA had, and instrumental he was with all members breaking free to do their solo projects, but always having ownership because he was the mastermind behind Wu-Tang. Not only that, ODB being his cousin, and when he got shot in the back, and got locked up and came out, and when he came out, his anxiety overcame his trust for his own cousin that he signed to Rockefeller. And then later on down the line, we lost ODB. But when I hear and see stories such as that, when I hear you tell me of the intelligence you are, your background, what you're studying, how passionate you are about your movement and the awareness you bring to it, it just confirms the respectability that you need to put on the name of hip hop. Like Birdman said, put some respect on my name.
Yeah, you better.
People
because
need to understand.
Every major corporation in the world uses hip hop culture. I don't care what they say. They may talk down about it on this day, but they definitely use it on their commercials. They use it on everything. They use it for their marketing. It's the biggest thing as far as musical movements. Even Michael Jackson had most of his stuff was influenced by hip hop. A lot of those dances he learned from hip hop dances. He'll tell you himself in an interview. That was the king of pop right there. But hip hop played a big role in Michael Jackson's, dancing, and even though he's showcasing his video, he went to the street and got those dances. So hip hop is that thing.
Do you remember him in his video "I'm Bad"? Like, and Wesley Snipes was up in there, and
of course, even the ones we had Heavy D rapping on it. He knew he was hip hop. They call him the king of pop commercially, but Michael Jackson was hip hop. What he stood for, it was all hip hop. From the dancing, from keeping it real, as far as the topics and the things he spoke about. So that was all like his way of, you know, his genre was pop, but his movement was from a hip hop foundation. You know what I mean? And,
so
and on the rock and roll and the James Brown and all of that, you know what I mean?
I want to know this about you. What do you foresee down the road of Arson? You're doing this now. Do you ever see yourself on the flip side, behind the scenes, production, not doing the artist thing, but more so creative, where you are, you know, doing stuff where you're producing, molding new artists, putting them on label? What do you foresee down the road for you?
I mean, I foresee everything that I'm doing now. I mean, I am molding new artists. I got Love Park, the R&B group. You know, they was on Apollo recently. They on my song Warm Hands, you know. So I'm actually producing videos and songs and writing R&B songs and hip-hop songs. And I'm always going to be an artist, though, because this ain't a choice. It's what I am. You know, it's not just who I am, it's what I am. So I'm always going to be an artist. And the good thing about now that we have seen the evolution of music and hip-hop, we see that you can be an artist forever, you know. Like, you look at Stevie, you know, you can have your hands in many pots. You could be on the business side. So I look at me doing everything. You know, this world tells you you have to be in a box. I'm not in a box. I do whatever I want. So, like I said, like my song, I do what I like. So I may be doing some production. I am acting. I just did a commercial with John Deere, you know, that I was rapping in, that'll be out soon on TV. So I just kind of do whatever I want. I'm an artistic person, you know, so I may shift focuses here and there, but I'm always going to be doing, you know, art.
Well, Arson, I want to thank you for gracing me with your presence. You've given me a bigger respect for you. I have been following you recently on your Instagram page. I think we came across each other on my breast cancer page. And then I have a second page, which is Love Jones Ty, and I think we follow each other there as well. I want to thank you for being my guest today, and I would love to continue to keep up with you and know what's going on with you. And we definitely, down the road, prior to one of your shows, I would love you to come back on either prior or after, like somewhere in December, just to give the listeners an update on what's happening with Arson, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, that's fine with me. Make sure y'all follow Arson215 and get my new album, Want. That's W-A-N-T, Want, on all platforms.
Okay. That's what's up. Arson, thank you for being a guest on my show today. And this
no
is
problem.
Ty Jones.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and I appreciate you.
No problem.
This is your girl, Ty Jones. This is Ty Jones, The Voice. You can catch me next show to be announced. We are blessed to have the amazing Arson, hip-hop artist from West Philadelphia, on the show today, and definitely spilled the tea on so much knowledge and information. Please follow the brother on his platforms, as he stated. And taking us out of here, I'm going to see. I have a few other artists that I do like. So taking me out tonight, I'm going to just choose. He's a singer, R&B singer out of Philly, but lives in D.C. And he goes by E, the R&B rock star.
Fascination, more like an obsession. Not gonna lie, been trying to control it, but it hasn't been easy. And damn, I tried, may sound superficial, but that's not my intention. Just gotta say, the physical attraction that got me captivated won't go away. And every time I see it, I want it. Gotta have it. I know exactly what it is I want. Like all the other fellas, I'm checking, but no disrespect. I gotta keep it real, not one to front. So baby, come on, you know I want it. Baby, come on, you know I need it. I'm letting you know you're my selection. Girl, you're the one. Just while I'm resting. Hashtag team thinking curvy, team thinking curvy, team thinking curvy. Team thick and curvy, team thick and curvy. All my thick and curvy women all over the world.